Good afternoon. My name is Jonna, and I will be your conference operator. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the webinar, How We Retain More Students by Intervening Earlier. I will now turn the call over to Ms. Beth Richter of Noel-Levitz.
Oh, thank you so much, Jonna, and thank you one and all for joining us today. Indeed, it's my privilege to host this forum as nearly 600 colleagues from a variety of campuses throughout the United States, Canada, and Mexico gather to focus on the important principle of retaining students through early and ongoing assessment and intervention. As I look at representation in today's call, I'm reminded of the scope of responsibilities for influencing student retention with a mindset towards college completion. From my desk at Noel-Levitz in snow-filled Iowa City, Iowa, I extend to each of you a warm welcome. The fact that you've carved time to join this forum today reflects your commitment to student success and your institutional missions. Indeed, we're all striving to enhance student retention and college completion in service of the common good. For if we don't, then not only our students, but also our budgets, tuition revenue, and even accreditation may be at risk. Further, as a nation, we believe that education is the key to ongoing economic vitality, all suggesting the gravity of the responsibility that we face. Acknowledging our challenge, these juxtaposed bar graphs portray a striking concern. On the left, we report that 93 to 96% of incoming students indicate they have a very strong desire to continue their education and are quite determined to finish their degrees. However, by contrast, we see the percent of students who actually finish their degrees by type institution, suggesting the unrealized potential of students who were not able to accomplish their initial dreams and aspirations. Seeking to address the barriers to completion, we focus on addressing students' needs, taking into consideration both cognitive and affective domains, ranging from study habits to math and science confidence, financial concerns, and the unrelenting question of value, or even the basic rationale of a college education. Here on this slide, you'll see that I've noted a few points of difference among first-generation students, traditional versus adult learners, male and female students, as we consider the most effective way to reach out to subpopulations with key messages and services. To inform your campus discussions, these data and more can be viewed in our just released 2013 National Freshman Attitudes Report. In addition to early identification of students' needs, we also assess students' strengths as well as their receptivity or responsiveness to services. Our national report of over 103,000 student records indicates that incoming students are receptive to taking college exams, some help in taking college exams, strengthening their math skills, selecting an educational plan, and improving their study habits, giving us a starting point to focus our efforts. And incidentally, if any of you would like to read more about incoming students' needs and interests through the first year of college, I invite you to read our 2012 research paper, The Attitudes and Needs of Freshmen at Mid-Year. As we take into consideration students' initial commitment, as well as their needs and within the context of receptivity to services, we recognize the importance of sharing best practices of what works in student retention. Hence, today's featured speakers will jumpstart our conversation by conveying how their programs and services make a difference in student success. In particular, we're very honored that Teresa Parker of Sinclair Community College, Mary Normile of Lynchburg College, and Isabel Sumaya of California State University Bakersfield have all agreed to share their exemplary programs and strategies for success. Before we begin the case studies, though, we have a question for you and then just a little more background information to share. As we pause for a moment, I've asked my colleague Joe Hillman to inquire of you all, how many currently have an early alert and intervention plan on your campus?
Thank you, Beth. To inform our understanding of the audience, if you wouldn't mind using your keypad on your computer at this point to indicate your response. And thank you for those of you who have already responded, yes, we have an early alert intervention plan, no, or perhaps somewhere in between, it's in development. So I'll give you just a moment here to continue responding. Thank you so much. We'll close the poll at this point. And just to note, we have about 86% of you who are either in development or have an early alert event retention plan on your campus. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you, Joe. That's so helpful. And we'll keep these responses in mind as a context from which our campus colleagues are listening. And to learn more about their various perspectives during the question and answer portion of the webinar. For a moment, though, please reflect with me upon how the themes that I've listed here might be helpful serving as meaningful points of connection with your incoming class. For instance, can you envision students with low commitment but high receptivity to career counseling? Or students with high sociability but low study habits? How about students with pressing financial concerns and family responsibilities, but an unwavering effort? As we progress through today's webinar, please consider how might these non-cognitive themes support and inform your student success initiatives. Perhaps several of you recognize these themes as scales from the College Student Inventory and its post-test. And you may be aware that these motivational assessments come in the form of the College Student Inventory, Forms A, B, or C now, the Mid-Year Student Assessment, and the Second-Year Student Assessment, all based on a simple premise that if we know which students are at risk and for what reason, and if we can couple this with their receptivity to assistance to inform our approach with these individuals, then we can serve more effectively while also influencing students' decisions to stay or to leave the institution. Thus, as mainstays within the student success initiatives that we're featuring today, our colleagues may reference their use of the CSI and its post-test, as well as their application of filters in the retention data center, as they reach out to students in key areas of need, such as financial guidance, career counseling, academic support, or personal counseling. Further, as our featured speakers allude to their programs and results, it may be helpful to realize that our Retention Management System Plus suite of services includes an array of analytics, assessment tools, and a data dashboard, all designed to support college completion initiatives through earlier and more focused interventions. And just a little footnote for our colleagues from Mexico and Puerto Rico, the online CSI is also available in Spanish. With all of this in mind, I'm now pleased to introduce our three featured speakers, Teresa Parker, Mary Normile, Isabel Sumaya. Teresa, thank you for beginning the case study portion of our session today.
Sure, Beth. Thank you. Hello to everybody. We are reaching you from Dayton, Ohio, Sinclair Community College, and a little bit about our institution so you can get a better understanding of who we are. We're headquartered in Dayton, Ohio. We have five convenient locations across southwestern Ohio, and we serve roughly 24,000 students. We've been in operation for 125 years, and we are known for providing very affordable, high-quality, accessible college and workforce training development here in the Dayton region. We are a Vanguard learning institution recognized by the League of Innovation, so we are forever on the cusp of what's new and up and coming to provide to our students. I'm going to share with you today, I'm the manager of the Center for Student Success here at Sinclair Community College, and that was birthed out of a Title III grant that we received back in 2003 to develop a model of working with the most at-risk, academically challenged students on the campus, and to try and move the needle on their success and retention in college. And so we developed what was called an individualized learning plan process that was an enhanced academic coaching model to work very closely with those new delicate students who were first time in college and very nervous about starting, and helping them to plan and create support so that they could persist in school. And in developing that model, we designed a set of computer software called the SSP, which is the Student Success Plan software, and that is heavily used across our campus as well as several other campuses across the U.S. It's a case management tool where we can journal on students and create action and goal plans. We can track our students, have an intake process through our office. So it really helps us in managing the large number of students that come through our door. And so when the Title III grant ended, we were able to enhance and plan further with what we wanted to design and do more so. The college absorbed the project, and we became the pathway to completion. And the reason that we moved to the pathway to completion model was that we saw lots of needs that weren't totally met by the Title III ILP project. We saw that we needed to do more connection and connectivity with community partner agencies because we were finding that about nearly 70% of the issues that students were having and persisting through college weren't in the classroom. They were outside the classroom and life issues. And so we've partnered with agencies and developed a very comprehensive resource guide so that we can try to help students with that 70% of life that happens outside that impacts their continuance in school. We also used to transition students after we were finished meeting with them for two terms consecutively. We transitioned them into Maine Advising, and what we found is that those students got so connected to our office they didn't want to leave. So we still wound up servicing them even though we weren't really supposed to because we had built that relationship. And that's where we determined that the relationship at the front end was so key to that student having that support network that would help them move forward in their success and degree completion. And then, of course, the state and national agenda shift that went from an access institution to not only access but completion. So we're here to not only bring them into the college but to see them complete. And that generated the need for us to go to more of a completion model. So our students, when they come into the college, enter through multiple doors, possibly admissions, or all of them typically through our enrollment center, and they test. And from that test, they are then directed to either our first-year advising center or to the Center for Student Success. If they test lower-level DEVs and or indicate that they are at a 150% of the poverty level, they're directed to the Center for Student Success, and so that we can do more intensive coaching with them. One of the things we do with those students is we talk to them not only about how to be successful in college, but we discuss with them what is the path to drop out, because we find some of our students are more comfortable in the what not to do arena because that's where they're familiar. So we try and help drive them over to the how to succeed and the types of tasks and activities that are involved with completing and having success in college. So it's a nice gauge for us to determine where the student's at and give them some information on what they should be doing. So we have redesigned how we meet with students. Initially, when coaches would work with students, they'd be referred to us. We would have them fill out the College Student Inventory Form B. When they arrived at our office, we would give them a link and ask them to complete it on their own time, but our completion rates weren't that great. So we did change our process. A student would get an appointment and meet with a coach, but our no-show rates were also relatively large. And so with that, we learned from past approach that that's just not the way our students want to be served. So what we realized was that we had a higher rate of students that would retain 42% higher if they actually attended their appointments. It's those students that we didn't see that we were comparing retention and they were falling off. So we wanted to meet the student where they were at. We changed our approach. We now meet them immediately upon exiting their testing, and they get connected right away with the person who's going to coach and support them all the way through their degree path. We also changed how we deliver the CSI, and the student completes it in the office. So that has helped tremendously with our completion rates with the CSI. And then that helps the coach then use that information as a coaching tool to areas of strength and support and areas of weakness that we need to develop an action plan for and set goals. So I'm giving you an understanding of what our retention rates are. We have switched to a semester, but this is our last year quarter-to-quarter averages and year-to-year averages. And you will see that we are almost 30% higher on a quarter-to-quarter basis and 33% higher year-to-year, with the college average being 32% retention year-to-year. So we are doing something right. I did want to share with you that part of what we do is celebrate the small successes as we go along, and this is one of my favorite initiatives in the office. We have a success wall where students can write an effort or an attempt that got them to their success point. And they write a message on a board. We take their picture and we put it up on our wall. Mm-hmm. And they get to see, other students get to see as a motivator, somebody that looks like them or somebody that's done something similar to them, and they realize that it is possible. So it's a really nice motivator, both for staff and students combined. We work with about 1,800 students per year with an average coach caseload of 300, so we are trying to keep it manageable enough that the coaches get to know their students. We are finding that students have low academic confidence when we look at the CSI scales, but they're very receptive to services. And so I think part of it was us needing to change how we deliver our services so that the students could receive the support that they need. We use the CSI in multiple locations around the college, one of which is the Pathway to Completion program, which is the coaching program and counseling program, but also in our first year seminar course and our pre-college programs. So students in our first year, almost freshman experience course, student success course, get some exposure and opportunity to take the CSI and have some coursework related to the outcomes of that. And then also in our pre-college programs, they are able to fill out the CSI, and they utilize that in some planning processes for attending college going forward. So that concludes my portion of the presentation, and I'm pleased to turn it over to Mary Normile, the Associate Dean for Student Engagement and Success at Lynchburg College in Virginia.
Thank you so much, Teresa, and it's such a pleasure to be with everybody to share the good news of what we're doing at Lynchburg College as well as the other institutions that are featured today. And I guess the thing I want to share first is that these tools, the College Student Inventory, the MISA, the Retention Predictor, they're all tools that work for us and have worked for us over years. We have a three-pronged approach to using these tools and to leading our students on their success journey. We want to create through our advising programs a stronger connection with students earlier in the first term. We do that through a strengths-based advising approach. We want to engage students through our first-year engagement program as well as through our advising program so students can reflect in discussions about how to best develop their talents and overcome areas of challenge that they are facing. Then we also want to match students to the services that they need so that they can address whatever challenges they are facing within the context of our community. A little bit about Lynchburg College. We are private. Four-year residential institution, highly residential. About 90% of our undergraduate students live on campus. About 2,800 students are with us now. We've seen about a 16% growth in our enrollment over the last several years, both by recruiting and retention efforts. Our programs in the health sciences are growing. You can see where our largest programs are in terms of academic interests of our students, and we are excited about the changing dynamics of our student body. Our students are quite diverse, particularly for a private four-year institution. We've been the last couple of years, on average, about 20% of our entering freshman class are ethnic minority students. Last year, actually, it was closer to 24%. We've seen a significant growth in first-generation and Pell-eligible students. Our students come in with a range of academic talents. We have students who come in with highest honors, and we have students who come in still searching for their academic identity, and we need to be able to respond to that variety of diverse needs in our student body. What we try to do is
practice early intervention and increasingly earlier intervention. And one of the things we're very excited about is the opportunity the MISA, the Mid-Year Student Assessment, has now given us to revisit where our students are in their growth and development and their journeys towards success at the mid-year. We've never had a meaningful tool before that could help us meet our students where they are at the midway point in their first-year experience. And I'll share with you some data on what we're finding in a few moments. What we try to do with using the College Student Inventory is identify early on in the context of creating relationships with our students and welcoming them into our community is to focus on what are the students' goals, what strengths are they bringing with them to their college experience, what barriers or challenges might exist that need to be overcome, what services do they need that they are identifying themselves as something that they need. What are they receptive to? What are they coming in where their hands are already raised saying, I would like some help in these areas? And how can this information help us organize our resources, our very precious and scarce resources, to deploy them directly to meet the needs of the students as they enter our institution and progress through their first year? We see the College Student Inventory and now the Mid-Year Student Assessment as an opportunity to do a number of things. First of all, we see it as an opportunity to listen to and for our students in a holistic way, in a way that allows us to gather meaningful information to look at their academic, personal, social, and financial matters, strengths and challenges. We also see it as an opportunity to create opportunities for our students to thrive at Lynchburg College, not just survive at Lynchburg College. So surviving is one thing, thriving is really the goal. I'm going to share with you in a moment many of the discoveries that we've made as a result of having these data available to us, but I also want us to continue to always be mindful that we need to celebrate our results with our students, with their families, with faculty and staff. As you go through the process, always take a moment to thank the people who are involved in the process and to celebrate the results. We have been using the College Student Inventory since 1999, and we have found it to be absolutely instrumental in the foundation of our academic advising program. For the last 2 years, we've been using the Retention Plus system to help us use data to inform our planning and decision making. And then, as I mentioned earlier, just this year, as a result of moving to using the College Student Inventory Form B, we've been able to add the Mid-Year Student Assessment to our suite of tools. Our toolbox is enhanced greatly by that new assessment. Let me share with you some of the discoveries that we've made, for example. We discovered, for example, that 75% of our students coming in had been athletes in high school. We had a sense of that before, but we did not realize the volume of it. We have one major athletic field on campus. We were able to work with our Board of Trustees to do a capital campaign under their approval to enhance that field. And that field now serves not just our varsity athletes, but our intramural and club sport athletes, as well as any student who just wants to have an opportunity to play on that field and take advantage of that wonderful resource. We also discovered through the College Student Inventory, as Teresa mentioned before, concerns on our students' part about their academic confidence and their preparedness for college-level work. So we have greatly enhanced tutoring on our campus. We use a supplemental instruction model. We call it peer-assisted study sessions, or PASS, at Lynchburg College. We've also implemented an academic coaching program, and what we've been able to do with that academic coaching program is using data from the College Student Inventory in combination with high school records and other data we have about our incoming students, we've developed a proactive academic coaching program where students are assigned an academic coach at the very beginning of their college experience. As a result of this combination of academic support programs, we've seen a 13% increase in the retention rates of our most academically at-risk students over the last 6 years. Another discovery that we've had, and this is a result of now using the MISA, is that at mid-year, we're able to re-engage with our students in meaningful ways. We realize that after the first semester, the students' grades don't necessarily tell the whole story. It doesn't necessarily give us a full picture of what the students are going to need to deepen their engagement with the institution second semester, to correct behaviors, or get additional assistance. The MISA was able to provide that for us. When we shared the MISA for the first time with our freshman academic advisors, almost all of whom are faculty at the college, they were delighted to have this new tool and this new opportunity to engage students in academic conversations for what they are going to need to be successful in their second semester of college. One of the other things that we were able to discover under this discovery theme is through the MISA, students respond to questions about what resources they use first semester and what resources or services they would like available second semester. We discovered that 191 students indicated on their MISA that they wanted help getting a part-time job. Within about 14 minutes of me sharing that list of students with our student campus employment coordinator, he sent out an email to those students, and 67% of those responded by completing an application for on-campus employment. And 30 new students were employed in jobs within a month of us doing the outreach efforts for them. At a private institution with the number of Pell-eligible students on our campus and the students needing financial aid, to be able to maximize student employment opportunities is absolutely key to our student success strategies. And then we've also been able to use the MISA results to gain some measure, some understanding of the growth and development of our first-year students. We've seen, for example, a 25% increase in their math and science confidence after one semester of college, a 20% improvement in their study habits, an 18% increase in their verbal and writing confidence, and very significantly for a residential campus where we really stress students living in community with one another, and a liberal arts college where we want students to encounter the challenges of new and different ideas, a 16.5% increase in opinion tolerance. These self-confidence, growth in self-confidence, does lead to self-efficacy improvements, which is the foundation for students believing that they can be successful and one of the most important components of a student success plan. Within the mid-year student assessment, we also ask students for their levels of satisfaction. And again, at mid-year, we had very valid data. We had a 94% response rate on this survey, so very rich data for us to use. The number one area of student satisfaction was safety and security, which is very important for a residential campus. And then the number two area of satisfaction was interaction with other students. And then the third area was interaction with faculty in class. All vital components of students feeling a sense of belonging in a community like Lynchburg College. We also learned that 78% of our freshmen at mid-year report that they intend to graduate from Lynchburg College, not just retain to the second year. That, if that is realized, would be a significant increase in our graduation rates and allows us to have a very solid foundation of knowing who plans to graduate from Lynchburg College within 4 years. Some other data I'd like to share with you about our results. We had a 93% fall to spring retention rate. Only 4 out of the 517 students are on academic probation. We also had a significant reduction in our students who ended up on academic probation their second semester. We had the highest first semester GPA in the cohort class, and the highest first semester GPA for our male students. In fact, our male student retention from fall to spring the last 2 years has been equal to or slightly higher than our females. That's an example of us bucking a national trend of underperformance of male college students. 25% of our freshmen will be invited to join Phi Eta Sigma, the National Honor Society for first-year students, and our students who I mentioned earlier who are in our academic coaching program, our proactive academic coaching program, had their highest first-term GPA on record. So we are very pleased with the results we continue to get with the CSI, with the enhanced opportunities we've had as a result of adding the MISA to our suite. And we feel like these tools, along with others, are helping us set a completion agenda at Lynchburg College. I thank you for your time, and now I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Isabel Samaya, from CSU Bakersfield. Isabel?
Thank you, Mari. Great presentation. Before I get started, I'd like to welcome everyone to the webinar. And before I start to share about how our university uses the College Student Inventory and the Mid-Year Student Assessment, I want to tell you a little bit about our university. We are a part of the California State University System. It is the largest university system in the country, including 23 campuses. Our campuses' enrollment range from 30,000 to 3,000, and CSUB falls somewhere in the middle with an enrollment of 8,500 students this last fall. We serve primarily undergrads, and we're known as a commuter school, and nearly 50% of our students are Hispanic, and so we are an official Hispanic-serving institution. Now, one of our major issues before our students even come to campus is that our first-time freshman class are very severely underprepared, needing remedial math and English, and sometimes, of course, they need both of those courses. And depending on the year, that number is anywhere from 80 to 70% of our incoming freshmen. So this no doubt impacts our graduation rate. Our six-year graduation rate is at 42%. Only 42% of our students graduate within that six-year time range. So we were very pleased to be awarded, it was 3 years ago, a Title V A grant supporting our improvement and development of a more comprehensive first-year experience program. Now, to compound our problem, we're on the quarter system. And those of you that are on the quarter system, you know what I mean when I say it's very, very difficult to be able to provide meaningful and targeted interventions in such little time frame. So when we were planning and developing our new first-year experience program, we knew that we needed some sort of assessment tool that was quick and easy for our students to use, quick and easy for us to be able to manage, and this is what the CSI has given us. And we can now intervene, I can say we can now intervene in a meaningful and targeted way. Now, a little bit about our FYE program. Now, prior to the implementation of the program about 3 years ago, truly, our first-year experience program just was comprised of a one-quarter program. This included a CSUB 101 course, which is an introduction to the university, and this is a class that's required. It's a part of their GE. But now students can, with our new program, can continue in the program by taking CSUB 103 in the winter. Our students are doing that right now. And CSUB 105 is offered in the spring, and this provides our year-long program. Now, the 103 is called our Passions course, where students can take a course that focuses on a passion of a faculty. We feel that our faculty are very, very important in terms of the process for the first-year experience program. And this serves to engage the students with faculty while they're still learning content. For example, right now I am teaching my 103. I'm a biological psychologist, and so my passion happens to be learning more and more about the brain. So I'm teaching my Passions course, and I call it Brainiacs 101, where students learn basics about the brain. And as a final project, we go out to the local elementary schools during Brain Awareness Week, which happens to be next week, and we teach elementary school kids about brain basics. Now, then in the spring, with modules already completed with my students, they then take the CSUB 101, and we call that our Ambassadors course. And they take what they learned in the 103 into many classrooms all over our city, and all the while representing CSUB and getting a closer connection to me as a faculty member, and then going out into the community and sharing the information that they've learned to elementary school kids. So we know that the research has shown that students will retain students if they're connected to either faculty, peers, or university in general, and they're more likely to remain with us. Now, I wanted to mention AVID. You see the AVID, the Decades of College Dreams, their logo. And AVID stands for, if those of you that don't know AVID, Advancement via Individual Determination. Now, AVID is a program that's well embedded into the high schools and elementary schools around the country. And AVID has been very, very successful. And their mission is to take average students and place them in above average courses. And, of course, they rise to the occasion, and they've got a wonderful record of getting students, high school students, into university. So their program focuses on what is called the WICOR, W-I-C-O-R, standing for Writing, Inquiry, Collaboration, Organization, and Reading. Now, traditionally, this is a program that is in high schools and elementary schools, and we're very proud of the fact that we're the first four-year institution in the state of California to incorporate some of the AVID strategies, of course, that are appropriate for university students. Mainly, we're focusing on those skills that will promote and enhance our critical thinking in our students. So we're using the Cornell Notes, philosophical chairs, Socratic seminars, and once again, we're promoting critical thinking in all of our courses. Now, our first-year experience program, we're using the CSI and the MISA, and it gives us a wonderful pre- and post-assessment. That's very, very important to me as director of the program. We serve approximately 1,300 students this year, school year, annual through these programs, and the majority of our students complete the CSI. With any assessment tool, if only a few students take it, then it truly doesn't represent the group. So we are very, very proud of the fact that we've been able to use this as a required assignment in the courses. We had to go through the Academic Senate. So we require all of our students to take the CSI, and so it is a part of the curriculum. And for those students that continue on into the 103 course, the MISA is also required. So we have a nice pre- and post-assessment built into the courses. And as the program director, assessment is very, very important for me for my year in reporting for the Department of Ed for the Title V-A grant. And so the use of these two assessment tools fit in perfectly with the mission of our grant. And, of course, also these data are important for me to share with the university. Now, more details, how we work with the students with the CSI. By the second week of the quarter, students are required to take the CSI, as I mentioned earlier. In this process, our faculty are very, very important. We have a summer workshop to teach our faculty that are going to teach the 101s and the 103s, teach them about the CSI and how to use it. So faculty use it in the classroom setting as a group discussion. And also, they assign a reflection paper so students can then, of course, focus time on their individual results. By the fifth week of the quarter, it's now the FYE program takes over. And so by the fifth week, it is now advising. Quickly, it goes by in a week of an eye, the advising for the prior, for the next quarter for winter. And at this point, the program takes over, and our FYE advisor meets with the students as they're scheduling their courses. She pulls the file of each student and follows up on their CSI results. Now, at the end of the quarter, when we have a little bit more concentrated time, we have the month of December off for the quarter system, then the program then looks at, by using the No-Levitt system, the filter, we start looking at the summary and planning report. And what I do there is I then begin to see patterns emerging in groups of students having the same issues. And from there, then we target them, the students, for workshops for our winter upcoming quarter. So here is an example of our most recent data from our freshman class, the summary and planning report. So this gives us an overall feel for what our students' strengths and weaknesses are. We look a lot at the dropout proneness score, and I'll discuss that in a few slides, what we do with that score. But this summary data really helps me understand what issues I may have with this incoming class. For instance, if you look at the dropout proneness score, let me see if I can do that here, we have almost at the 63rd percentile, which of course is above the 50th percentile, the norm. So I'm concerned about this cohort of students. But if I look at my predicted academic difficulty, I see that my students are scored almost at the 50th percentile. And so that tells me that they're at the normal range for their academic difficulty, but I have a high dropout proneness score. So that's telling me that my students are going to, what's contributing possibly to this dropout, this high dropout proneness score or percentile, is that it's going to be non-academic related scores. So I can look at problem scores, like that sense of financial security here in terms of the in the general coping skills scores, that I can see that my students are below the norm, and so I can start focusing and targeting those students that scored within that range. Lastly, I wanted to mention the receptivity skills. As mentioned earlier in the first presentation, the receptivity skills are very important for us because it lets us know how receptive and open our students are. And the wonderful thing I like about this is that it tells us exactly which students. So fortunately, our students can be provided with very targeted types of emails and workshops. In general, I feel strongly that by using the CSI and looking at the CSI data, it's really adding educational value to the in-class as we require it. It's a required component in the class. And, of course, we're tapping into the strengths and weaknesses of the individual cohort and a group, importantly, on an individual basis also. So important for us, it helps us promote our learning communities when we start to target specific groups of students so that they can attend these specialized workshops. And, of course, when we cannot provide the services, then the CSI is wonderful in helping us refer them out to other divisions on campus. Now, in terms of that dropout Pronus score that I mentioned earlier, we've also found for us that the CSI is a good predictor, specifically this dropout Pronus score, for who is going to be on academic probation. Now, we collected pilot data for the fall 2011 group, So after the fall 2011, we had 317 students, our first-time freshmen, on probation, which is a very high percentage. Almost 30% of our incoming freshmen were on probation. So this issue of probation, being able to figure out who's going to be on probation, is very, very important for us. So we developed what we called a high-risk group. We simply took the students that scored a 7 and 9 on the dropout Pronus, and we found that nearly 50% of those students actually did go on to probation. So we feel that it's a good predictor of academic trouble. Now, out of our 140 the 140 students that were on probation, we unilaterally put them in our CSU B103, which is the second succession of courses in our first year experience. Over the Christmas break, we sent them a nice email telling them that this was going to be good for them. And of course, they weren't required. The second course isn't a requirement. So we had about half of them self-select out. And so within this pilot study, we actually had 68 students officially stay in the program. So what our intervention was, this high-risk group, was of course, to put them in the 103 course, which, of course, if I let you remember, that we have all the AVID strategies within these courses, which is focusing on critical thinking, which is good for these students that are on probation. Then we had them also attend four different workshops during the quarter where they developed an academic plan by the second week. Then the fourth week, we had them focus on time management, learning style workshops, and then by the eighth week, we revisited that academic success plan. Plus, they were required to see our FYE advisor twice during the quarter. Here's an example of our academic success plan. It's very basic and easy. We call it basically an accountability checklist, where we simply ask the students to answer the basic questions. Based on what went wrong last quarter and to improve my GPA, I plan to do, and we've just asked them to highlight three. We don't want to make this difficult and complicated for our students, so we ask them to highlight three. And we actually have students record the actions that they have taken to change that negative behavior. And this is why we call it accountability, because we want them to be held accountable for their behaviors. So very important for us is to get these students to realize that if you stop doing the video game so much, you possibly may get a better score on that exam. So very non-ambiguous and very black and white. We want to make it simple for our first-time freshmen, so they can see a change in their behavior and possibly a change in their grades. And here are the results of our intervention. We were very happy and pleased to find that 98% of our students were retained. Importantly, is this nearly 40% actually went into good standing, got out of probation. Granted, we did have the large majority still on probation, but we didn't lose them, so we're still working with those students. And only 2% of those students were actually dismissed. Also, we're very pleased to find that the MISA report, which we, as I mentioned before, is a required course in the 103 is a wonderful tool in that it allows us to be able to see how our students have progressed. So the mid-year assessment provides us with feedback and progress of our students from first to second quarter. And as you can see here, in most of the categories here, most of the subscales, with the indicating the arrows up, our students did show improvement as indicated by the arrows up. So this is very important to us, especially when we're looking at the subdomains of verbal and writing confidence and math and science confidence here, given a majority of our students come in meeting the remedial courses. So in closing, for us, we find that the CSI is a good predictor that helps us predict who's going to be on probation. Of course, it leads us to develop targeted intervention programs, and it does help us understand why our students are not doing well. And also, I want to highlight this, very important to us is our students, it helps the students with their self-awareness. The results come immediate to the students. Not only do we get the results, but the students get the results immediately online. And for the MISA, it serves as a wonderful assessment tool. This is very important to me as I'm the director of a grant that I have to a year in reporting. It assists us in providing students with services that they need and they want. And once again, it helps our students with their self-awareness of their own needs. I'd like to now turn it over to Beth.
Oh, thank you so much, Isabel, and thank you, Mary, and thank you, Teresa, and each of you on the phone. Please stay with us because we're now entering the question and answer period of the webinar. And so please do hang with us. Initially, my colleague Joe Hillman is going to pose just a couple of questions to you, and then we're going to open the lines for you to speak directly with the presenters. Thank you.
And you'll see a polling question now displayed on your screen. Are you interested in learning more about how the College Student Inventory and the Mid-Year Student Assessment can inform your strategies for student success? These are the assessments that the presenters were talking about today. And again, use your keypad to indicate. I'll give just a moment longer here to record your responses. All right, thank you. And we'll go on to our next polling question. I'm interested in taking the online College Student Inventory to gain hands-on experience. This is an opportunity for you to actually go in through a link to take the assessment as if you are a student, kind of an experiential process here. It takes about 20 minutes, quite insightful in terms of what the assessment provides to you and then how the student report looks. So again, thank you for responding to that question. We'll move to our final polling question. If you'd like to talk with a Noel Levitz consultant about your overall retention goals and needs, if you can indicate here the timeline that might be appropriate for you, perhaps as soon as possible or within the next several months. All right. Again, thank you so much for your feedback to that. And please note that we will follow up with you based on your responses here. Know that you can also give us a call at any time. Happy to provide you with immediate feedback. Thank you. Beth?
Oh, thank you so much, again, to each of the presenters as well as my colleagues and the operator. And at this point, Jonna, would you kindly instruct the group how they can ask their questions of our featured speakers?
I'd just like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Okay, we have
and
a question
Beth,
from... Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I was just going to interject with a couple of questions that have come over through the web, but let's take the online caller first.
Okay, CJ Mathis, your line is open.
Hi, I was just wondering, what is the structure for staffing that supports your early intervention program?
All right, excellent. Thank you so much, Mr. Mathis. And what institution are you with?
I'm with Austin Peay State University in Clarksville, Tennessee.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And I think it's probably different for each of the three case study speakers. Teresa, can you get us started?
Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry. What is the staffing of?
the staffing structure that supports your early intervention program?
Okay. Well, we have on staff 6 full-time master's level counselors or coaches, we call them, and then 1 that is full-time, but she half-time manages our early alert system, and the other half of the time she manages a caseload of students. So that's our number ratio to 1,800 students, so roughly 300 students per coach.
Thank you. Thank you, Teresa. And Mary?
We use our the college student inventory as a tool within our advising program. Our advising program is a faculty advising program for first year students. Each faculty member has a caseload, Teresa, I'm sorry to say, of about 16, they use the college student inventory there. Within my office, which is Academic and Career Services, we have 4 full-time professionals who direct advising, first-year programs, learning resources, and disability services, who also are part of the early intervention team.
And this is Isabel from CSUB.
Yes.
We have 1 official first-year experience advisor. I have a data tracking specialist. I have 3 student mentors. I have 1 curriculum specialist. And in our university, unless you're an undeclared student, you get advising through faculty. So all of our faculty serve as somewhat a part of our program.
Thank you. Thanks to each of you. And, sir, if you would like to write me, Beth Richter at noellevitz.com, if you'd like to write me and dialogue a little further, I'd have many case studies on file with different models, be they residential hall or coaching programs or professional advising, faculty advising, academic counselors. So I'd be happy to dialogue with you further about that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Jonna, do we have additional questions?
Yes. The next question comes from Andrea Keller from Highland Community College.
Yes.
Your line is open. Sorry.
Hi, Andrea.
Actually, I just used her name because she enrolled for the seminar. This is Craig Mosier at Highland Community College in Kansas.
Yes, sir.
We were interested in the products that Noel Levitz has, but of even higher interest is the details of what the colleges are using or how their approaches resulted in those good advances for their students. For instance, I'm not going to remember the exact number on how they improved with their writing skills, how they improved with their math skills.
Yes.
What's involved in the SSP at Sinclair?
Yes. Some more particulars. This
yes.
is an excellent point. Excellent point, and why I'm always encouraging additional retention success journal articles, as many as we can get, for more detail. Teresa, can you share maybe a website address of where Mr. Mosier may receive more information, for instance, about your program?
We do have an open source website. I don't have it handy to me. It was on my presentation, but I don't know the exact web address by heart. I apologize for that. If you go to www.sinclair.edu, and if you searched open source SSP, it would likely draw you right to the site.
All right, excellent. And if our colleagues at Highland College wanted to get more detail about how, for instance, the different campuses have strengthened their students' academic confidence, in particular math and science confidence or verbal and writing confidence, is there maybe some curriculum or additional detail that Mary and Teresa might want to share as well, some site that this colleague could go to?
I would be happy to
and Isabel?
Suggest, this is Mary from Lynchburg College. I'd be happy to suggest if you look at the Lynchburg College website, www.lynchburg.edu, and look at learning resources, there's a pretty good description there of the resources we have available for our students. One of the things we've learned is that if the student's confidence level is low, we should encourage them actually to address it head on by getting into the classes sooner rather than later, and then making sure we have the academic support necessary in those classes. As I mentioned before, we use a supplemental instruction model, and we do have tutoring, supplemental instruction model tutoring, embedded in all of our math classes through Calculus 1, in most of our lab science programs, in our business, accounting, and economics programs, in about 13 content areas about across 30 different courses. And we found that that makes that having the students deal head-on with their concerns about the course by getting in the course with the additional support where they can actually prove that they can be successful, they can demonstrate that they can be successful with the help that's right there, goes a long way to improving those confidence scores.
And at our university, because we have such a high level of students coming in needing remedial math, we're actually starting a new program. We've been doing it little by little over the last few years, but it will be official this next summer, where all of our first-time freshmen, they will not be able to actually register or attend courses in the fall until they've completed their remedial math courses during a summer program that we've been working on and has been found to be pretty successful. So we want to nip that in the bud. And within those courses, because we have such a high level of remedial math, we know that some of it has to do with anxiety with math just in general, that their confidence. And so I know that the school has workshops that specifically are geared towards things like math anxiety and how to overcome that. And of course, then we're working with our counseling department. So it's a pretty big issue on our campus. So I think a little bit of everybody gets involved with that issue here on our campus.
Thanks to each of you for sharing that. Does that help a little bit, Mr. Mottier?
A little bit, yes. We were more interested. I'll look at the websites and see what the content is, because we have all of this in place. It's just what's in the course content or in the supplemental that seems to be more successful than what we're doing. So I hope that's in there.
Yeah, and if you email me, beth-richter@noellevitz.com, I'll keep this conversation going and trying to deepen it with you to fulfill that request.
Okay, thank you.
I'll do my best on that, yes.
And I wanted to mention to the participants, we will be providing you with a link to the resource materials that were referred to during the webinar, as well as the PowerPoint presentation and a recording of today's event. So that will be coming in the next few days.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate that. And I have a couple questions that were written in. In particular, Teresa, Jamie Lee Jelk is inquiring, was PTC an initiative led by the college's administration or staff? And Kristen Horn was asking of you, Teresa, do all new students follow this process, or do you identify the at-risk students and place them in this process? And what if the student does not keep up with their appointment? So we have a couple questions there from our community college colleagues.
Okay. The adoption of the ILP project into the PTC, because the Title III grant ended, because the data showed so strongly that the retention moved the needle so greatly and that students were 5 times more likely to graduate if they went through the coaching model of ILP, the college then, upper echelon, president on down to the vice presidents and the board, decided to adopt the program into hard funds through the college. And so it came off the grant funding based on the fact that the retention rates showed over 5 years that it did have an impact. So we can thank our upper echelon for that. That was a layered question. So it was also a question about the...
Also a question was posed from a different individual inquiring, and I think you have a graphic that helps with that, inquiring if all students follow the process or do you identify at-risk students?
We identify at-risk students at the testing site, the enrollment center location. Unfortunately, nothing is mandatory at this college currently, so if a student decides to bypass us, they can do that. And there are about 3,000 students that test into our criteria and about 1,800 to 1,900 that actually come to our office. So we do still reach out to those that bypassed us because we typically then find them through early alerts that come through from instructors about challenges, and then we try to draw them back into the office that way.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I also have a question from Dr. Zeller from Bellin College inquiring, and I think others probably have this question also. Can you use some of these instruments, some of these assessments with in smaller campuses? Absolutely. We work, I've had the privilege of working with this instrument over the course of 25 years, and we work with a variety of different two-year and four-year public and private institutions of all sorts of different sizes and with different emphases in their institutional missions. So, yeah, there's lots of options for using the College Student Inventory and its post-test or this just even getting started with the CSI. So please, yes, be sure to be in touch with myself and my colleague Joe Hillman, and there's not rigid lines here to follow. We just want to be of service in your goals on behalf of student success. Do we have some other questions that are maybe in the queue, Jonna, that you could send in our direction?
No, there are no further questions.
All right. In that case, I'd just like to encourage us to continue the conversation. I don't know if any of you are on Twitter, but I've just joined Twitter on a professional level. And so I'll scroll to my address here shortly, hoping that we can continue these, what I think are very robust conversations that just need a forum to continue. So we'll give you that address shortly. Also, here we go with that Twitter indication. Thank you, Joe. And also want to invite you to future webinars that we have on the horizon. We have a webinar at the end of March on the 26th where we'll feature Clarkson University, kind of in a forum like we did today, but looking at predictive modeling. And then we'll also have an event in early June, June 18th, where we'll feature Missouri Western State University and Robert Morris University on the topic of strategies for second-year students. Let me just ask one more time if there's any other questions that might be there for discussion. Otherwise, I just want to give a hearty applause to each of the case study presenters, Teresa, Mary, Isabel, and a big thanks to my colleagues, Joe Hillman, Jody High, Janine Panfil, and many others, Jennifer Ward, who've made this possible, and anyone else whom I might not be sharing their name, Kim Leisinger, many others who've made this possible. So we wish you a good afternoon and look forward to further collaborations and further discussions with you. Thank you so kindly.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.